to Refreshing Reflections. I'm Sean Scott, and today I'll be reading the September 2019 issue of The Guidepost. I begin with our cover story, Three Names, by Micah Herndon of Talmadge, Ohio. The IED blew up in an instant. For this Marine, its effects reverberated for years. You probably saw pictures of me all over social media this past April. I'm the dude who literally crawled across the finish line of the Boston Marathon. I was totally gassed, but nothing on earth was going to keep me from finishing, because it wasn't just me. My left running shoe had the names of three comrades in Afghanistan whose lives had been destroyed by an IED. Adapt and overcome was pounded into us in the Marines. I had to push through. I got down on my hands and knees and crawled to the finish line for Ballard, for Hammer, for Juarez. Running had never been a thing with me. I had to do it in basic, and I took it up again only at a low point, after returning to civilian life. Fighting overseas, I had been in charge of multi-million dollar equipment and entrusted with the lives of fellow Marines. But back home in Ohio, I couldn't get anyone to hire me. Finally, I applied for work as an electrician and learned the trade. But my self-esteem was shot. Nothing was the same. My marriage fell apart, and my wife and I divorced. I was tortured by survivor's guilt. Those guys who had died over there, couldn't I have saved them somehow? I had enlisted in 2007 after one semester at Hiram College and one at Kent State. School wasn't really doing it for me, and the idea of signing up for the military was appealing to me, sacrificing oneself for something bigger. I played basketball and football in high school and was in good shape. I figured boot camp at Paris Island would be a breeze, but I soon discovered that the real discipline for a Marine was mental. Learning how to tough things out. To be tougher than the enemy. That mindset came in handy when I was deployed. I was a machine gunner with the 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, the Lava Dogs. I did two deployments, first in Iraq, then in Afghanistan. We did about 400 missions altogether. My mom wasn't crazy about me signing up for the military and had given me a silver charm to keep in my flak jacket, a little angel with wings. I hung it on a piece of cord when I sat up there in the gun turret. January 9, 2010, Afghanistan deep in Taliban territory. I was worried about fellow Marines, Mark Juarez and Matthew Ballard, and the British journalist who was embedded with us, Rupert Hammer. I was the lead machine gunner and the first squad leader in charge of six other gunners. Our staff sergeant knew I had a lot of experience and had asked me where we should put everybody in the convoy. I placed myself in the first vehicle, which was usually the most dangerous position, the one most likely to hit an IED. Ballard and I had become good friends. He was expecting a son back in the States. I didn't want him to be at as much risk. I didn't know Juarez and Hammer as well, but I knew they had families back home. I put the three of them in the last vehicle where I figured they'd be safer. IED stands for Improvised Explosive Device, also called Improvised Expletive Device. You're constantly on the lookout for them. I mean, all the time. And it's still not good enough. Our convoy was hauling supplies, journalists and fellow Marines between bases. It was early in the day when we hit that deadly 400-pound IED. It didn't explode under the first truck, the one I was in. Instead, it exploded under the last vehicle. Hammer and Juarez were killed instantly. Ballard was thrown from the turret and landed on the ground, both legs shattered. There was screaming and blood and debris everywhere. Instantly, we reverted to our training. We created a 360-degree safe zone around the convoy so Ballard could be medevaced out and the bodies of Hammer and Juarez could be airlifted out. We who remained stayed focused. Once the casualties were taken care of, we had to move on. We had to complete our mission. All the while, I asked myself, why hadn't I seen that bomb? Could we have avoided it? Later on, during that deployment in Afghanistan, I hit two more IEDs and survived both. The first one didn't go off. It had been wired wrong. We were lucky. Really lucky. We, yet deep down, a part of me wondered if I didn't deserve to be blown up too. The second one was a powerful 50-pound bomb. The blast knocked me out, my ears ringing, but I wasn't bleeding anywhere. I still had my arms and legs. We had music playing in the truck that day, and somehow the iPod survived the blast. The song I heard while the doctor was checking my vitals was Sarah McGowan's Angel. The Marines wanted to medevac me out, but I knew if that happened, I wouldn't be able to return to my buddies in the platoon. I would have been sent back to my duty station. Instead, I stayed at the base and didn't go on any missions for a week, trying to clear my head. We got mortared on the base that same week. More explosions, more screams, more destruction. I was honorably discharged after 4 years. I had served my time and served my country. It was when I was back home in Ohio that the survivor's guilt hit me big time. Here I was, safe, close to family and friends, but I didn't feel safe. Racked by memories, horrible nightmares waking me up at night. I loved my wife, Sarah. I didn't know why we couldn't keep our marriage together. I was a mess inside, as if a bomb had gone off inside my soul. It was then, living by myself, that I took up running. I'd heard that you could get this runner's high when you increased the mileage, and I needed something to take me out of myself, something to release me from my feelings. I'd put those men in the last vehicle. I'd chosen the spot where two of them would die instantly. For months, I'd held out hope for Ballard. He made it to Walter Reed and endured multiple surgeries to repair his shattered leg. He came home to be with his wife and his son. But things went bad for him. The pain was so intense. The painkillers were too many to count. He died of a heart attack. I ran outdoors under grooves of trees along Ohio's Freedom Trail. I thought of Ballard, Hammer, and Juarez. Three names, I knew those guys were in heaven. They'd done their best. I wanted to do my best for them here on earth. I started this habit of praying their names as I ran, every day running a little farther, a little faster, staying close to them. Inhale, Ballard. Exhale. Inhale, Hammer. Exhale. Inhale, Juarez. Exhale. Someone suggested I run a half marathon. I did it in Canton, then a marathon. I did that in Canton, too, fueled by more guilt than anything else. My work was going well. I ended up being hired as a substation electrician for First Energy Ohio Edison. If only this sense of responsibility for my comrade's death would leave me. It was the thing I could not outrun. Sarah and I started talking again, slowly rebuilding the trust between us. In 2017, we remarried. She could see the change in me since I'd taken up running, the healing that was going on, that I was trying. The guilt was never completely gone, but I had a way to fight it. and I felt as if I was doing something to honor my fallen comrades. It was Sarah's idea, putting their names on my shoes. By the time I was running the Boston Marathon, we had the good news that we were expecting our first child. I wouldn't have scripted it the way it turned out, crawling to the finish line. What an inglorious end for a Marine. Some people saw that shot of me on my hands and knees and thought maybe I just knelt down to thank God. Well, I wouldn't have crawled to do that. But I did say a prayer for 26 miles with every inhale and exhale. Ballard, Hammer, Juarez. Those guys felt very near. I'll run in their memory forever. When that bomb went off, I too was injured. A moral injury that tore into my soul, throwing off all sorts of spiritual shrapnel. I feel as if I am trying to put my soul together with every mile I run, outpacing the guilt that exploded that day on the battlefield. Every mile I run draws me closer to God. Dee's Friendly Diner by Dana Smith of Statesboro, Georgia. She was a hopeless case. Almost. I walked past the diner every day on my way to work. The diner was called Mr. Omelette. It wasn't fancy. A counter and tables, breakfast and lunch. Smelled good outside. Lots of regulars. Everyone seemed happy. I worked at McDonald's. It was a job, and I was grateful to have one. Still, I wondered what it would be like to work at Mr. Omelette. Probably better hours. Nice to be around happy people. Some employees at McDonald's were mean. I was too intimidated to apply. They'd never hire someone like me. I was a recovering drug addict. I lived at a woman's shelter plus care program, supportive housing for people with substance abuse or other challenges. While I attended drug court, I had no car, no driver's license. I lost custody of my kids a long time ago. This wasn't my first arrest for drugs. I gotten caught with opioids this time, but I did lots of drugs. Heroin, crack, cocaine, alcohol. Lots of other bad stuff too. Stealing, prostitution. I sank about as low as you can go and then some. I was sober now. Not for the first time. I started every day praying to stay sober. I went to outpatient drug treatment, attended support groups, meetings, and always showed up to work on time. I really wanted to change my life. After more than a decade as a drug addict, I wanted so badly to make my kids proud. They were young adults now. Let me tell you something. It is hard to stay clean from drugs. When you feel ashamed and hopeless, it is so hard to resist using. My life is worthless, you think. Might as well get high. Picturing myself working at Mr. Omelette, serving all those normal, happy people in that bright, pleasant place, helped me to hold out against drugs. What if the owner did hire me? Wouldn't happen. Those nice people would stare if I went in or leave. I used to hate drug addicts. There was some problem drinking in my family when I was growing up. I wanted to emulate my parents, hard workers who did their best to raise my siblings and me. I had bad acne as a teenager, and I got bullied a lot at school. I had zero self-confidence. Despite my good intentions, I was primed for addiction. I graduated high school and completed a one-year nursing program. I found a job at a nursing home, then moved to a hospital. I went back to school to become a registered nurse. I met a man at work who flattered me. A few months later, I was pregnant. We married, but things got dysfunctional pretty quickly. after another child, the dysfunction got worse. Eventually, we divorced. I became a single mom. A guy I knew through my ex-husband introduced me to methamphetamines. I still don't know why I tried it. He kept at me. Just a little, he'd say. Do it for me. Trust me. You'll love it. The drugs felt great at first, then quickly took over. I went from meth to pills and started stealing medication from the hospital. I got fired. After a failed stint in rehab, I switched to heroin. I fell into prostitution and lived on the streets. Before I landed in drug court, I was with a man who gave me drugs to keep me close. He threatened to kill me if I ever left him. He might have done it, except I got arrested. No, those nice folks at Mr. Omelette would not want me as their waitress. I prayed about it anyway. God, I really want to work at Mr. Omelette. Give me the courage to go in there and ask. One day, I stopped in front of the diner. It was closed for the day, but a man I assumed was the owner was behind the counter. I stood there thinking, not only was I a recovering addict, I was 43, twice the age of the servers I'd seen. I thought some more. If I never went in, I'd never know whether I was passing up a great opportunity. I took a big breath, then walked in. I'm wondering if I could apply to be a waitress here, I said to the man. He smiled, but also shook his head. Sorry, we're not hiring at the moment, he said. You're welcome to check back later. My name's Dave. What's yours? I'm Dana, I said. I really like your restaurant. Thanks, Dana. Check back anytime. I knew my way around a diner. My mom used to run one called the Friendly Diner. I worked there growing up. Mom served Southern comfort food, fried chicken, turnip greens, biscuits. I knew I could do a good job for Dave. I decided to check back every week. One week, something amazing happened. Dave seemed pleased. I was so dedicated. After I asked my question, he said, "You know what? I just had someone not show up for work, Dana. I'll give you a try. When can you start?" I made sure to tell Dave about my past. He hired me anyway. I started early one morning. Most Mr. Omelette regulars came for breakfast. My first day, you'd never have known I'd worked in a diner. I was so nervous. I got everything wrong. "I'm sorry," I'd say. "Oh, pardon me, ma'am. So sorry." Finally, one couple stopped me. They were in their 80s and just about as bright and cheerful as can be. "Honey, you don't have to apologize so much," the woman said. "I'm Teresa. This is my husband, Jimmy. We think you're doing a terrific job." "I keep getting the orders wrong." "So what? You'll figure it out. We all ordered the same thing anyway." Everyone laughed. Each day got better. Teresa and Jimmy introduced me to Fred and Pat, another regular breakfast couple. More regulars introduced themselves. Roy and Ann told me they'd overheard me talking to Dave and were praying for my recovery. "We all are, honey," Ann said. Going to work became the best part of my day. I learned all about my customers, and they learned all about me. They even asked me to pray for them. Me, with all my troubles. I was getting to know the women I lived with and people I met in my drug treatment program. Their support, plus love for my kids, my sister, and customers at the diner, made me feel good about myself for the first time in my life. One day, Dave made an announcement. "Good news. I'm expanding. We're moving to a location by the university. Big place. You'll love it. The new place was nice, but the regulars, many stopped coming. All the students changed the atmosphere, and the new location was farther away. I was devastated. Those regulars were my family. I didn't know what to do. Dave had been so nice to me. I didn't say anything. I just fretted every day. Sometimes I drove past the old location. Yep, I had my license back. One day, a ridiculous notion came into my head. What if I opened my own restaurant in the old spot? Ha! Who would ever give me a business loan? I mentioned the idea to a regular who still came to the new location. Do it, Dana, he said. Don't be intimidated. If you need anything, you talk to us. Days later, I arrived to find Roy and Anne in the restaurant. They pulled me aside. We'd like to lend you some money to help you start a restaurant, said Roy. We've prayed about it, and we know this is the right thing to do. I'd already saved some money. I refinanced my car and borrowed more. Roy and Anne's loan gave me enough to open Dee's Friendly Diner at Mr. Omelette's old location. My first day of business was my 48th birthday. Many old regulars came. I was a wreck, trying to make sure everything went right. I can't say it did, but no one cared. Everyone was thrilled to be back and so proud of me. I felt proud of me, too. 7 years later, Dee's Friendly Diner is still going strong. I have lots of regulars, of course. I also have a staff of cooks and servers who are almost all in recovery. The walls of my restaurant are lined with pictures of customers, employees, and people in recovery. What's stronger than drugs? God is stronger. How does God show His strength? Through the prayers and support of a loving, faithful community. That's Dee's Friendly Diner. My restaurant family even supported me through the death of my son. I wish I could say it was happily ever after when my kids came back into my life. They'd been with my ex through my years of drug use. My son, my younger child, died of heart disease. Not so long ago, that would have been a reason to get high. Now, it was a reason to stay sober. Drugs did so much damage in my life, and in my family's life. I can't undo that. What I can do is trust God and give others the love and support that were so crucial to my own recovery. People come to the restaurant looking for a job. I can tell they're like I was, starting their recovery journey. I welcome them into this place of love. The kind of love that lifted a person like me from her very lowest to her highest. Living Sober by Zach Clark, co-founder of Release Recovery. There is no one-size-fits-all approach to recovery from drug or alcohol addiction. Popular media often gives the impression that a 28-day stint in rehab is all it takes. In fact, for most people in recovery, it is a lifelong journey. Inpatient treatment is the start, not the end. One of the most challenging parts of recovery is transitioning from treatment to everyday life. Treatment centers and sober living facilities are typically high structured with plenty of supervision and accountability. Eventually, people in recovery must learn to live with less support. What are the keys to success for people reintegrating into sober life? As Dana Smith learned, two important factors are community and responsibility. Addiction is a disease of isolation. Substance abuse ruptures relationships and erodes people's abilities to function at home and at work. Treatment programs teach skills for repairing relationships, But people must learn to apply those skills in everyday life. Returning to unhealthy environments, including friends or family members with substance use problems, can be a disaster. Supportive communities can be found in 12 steps or other recovery programs, support groups, sober living houses, and among healthy friends, family members, and coworkers. In community, people in recovery can share their struggles and learn to relate to others without the destructive veil of drugs or alcohol. Addiction is also a disease of despair. Addicts feel tremendous shame, and while they are using, see no hope for recovery. An excellent way to build a sense of self-worth is to help others and earn a living. Many sober living environments require residents to cook, clean, or otherwise help maintain the household. As they gain confidence in themselves and progress in their recovery, people can mentor others on the path or volunteer at treatment programs or other community organizations. Many people in recovery find work within the treatment industry, sometimes becoming treatment professionals themselves. Addiction shatters lives, but the discipline and insight gained in recovery can lead to creativity, empathy, and professional accomplishment. As Dana Smith discovered, the worst thing that happens to a person sometimes turns out to be the best thing. With the right support and opportunities, people in recovery can become strong, confident blessings to their families and communities. Well, we are out of time, but I would like to leave you with a quote from Sierra with her husband, Russell Wilson, quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. I truly believe that no one can close the door that God has opened for you. Thank you for listening. I'm Sean Scott, and until next time, may we all be refreshed.